All right, guys, we are going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and I'm going to see if I can help you get your game on. That's the theme of our series. Our Vacation Bible School theme this week is Game On, and the title today is This Time It's Personal. This Time It's Personal. And so we're going to look at a passage here. 1 Corinthians in chapter 9, verses 19 through 27. So you have the Gospels, Acts, Romans, and then 1 Corinthians in the New Testament. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning in verse 19. And then we're going to go through the end of the chapter. The Word of God says this, beginning in verse 19, Paul writes, he says, "For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without the law, as without the law, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without the law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some." Verse 23. "And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that you may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached others, I myself should be a castaway." So you're going to see some sports metaphors here in this passage, and we're going to look at those just a little bit. Today I want to ask you, the first question I want to start off with is, how well are you sharing your sermon? Do we have anybody here that gets a little nervous when they have to speak in public? Okay, so this might be fitting for you. You might can identify with this. The abbot of a monastery called the novice into his office and instructed him to give the homily at the next morning's chapel. The novice was struck with fear. The next morning, the chapel came. He stood in the pulpit. The brothers were there. His hands were trembling. His knees were knocking. His voice was quivering. There was a long pause before he first spoke. And then he asked a question. "Do you know what I'm going to say?" They had no idea, so all of their heads went back and forth almost in unison, as if it were choreographed. He said, "Neither do I. Let's stand for the benediction." The next day was almost an exact repeat of the day before. All the brothers sat there before him. His hands shook, his knees knocked, his voice trembled. And there was a long pause. "Do you know what I'm going to say?" he asked. Well, after the previous day's experience, they had a pretty good idea. So all their heads nodded yes. "Well, then there's no need for me to tell you. Let's stand for the benediction." The abbot was angry beyond description. He brought the young man to his office and he said, "If you do that again, you are going to be in solitary confinement. Eat bread and water for 30 days and receive any other punishment I can think of. Tomorrow morning, give the homily and do it right." So the third day, chapel attendance hit an all-time high. Everyone was there to see what he would say, and it was almost an exact repeat. He stood there, trembling, voice quivering, and after a long silence, he asked, "Do you know what I'm going to say?" Well, after 3 days of this, about half of them had a pretty good idea, and they nodded their heads yes. The other half noticed the switch from day to day, and they weren't so sure what to expect, so they shook their heads no. The novice observed this, and he said, "Let those who know tell those who don't, and let us stand for the benediction." That was his sermon. What's your sermon? What's your story of God's favor and his grace in your life? Who's reading your book? Right? Who's watching you this week? Maybe it's coworkers. Maybe it's your family members. Maybe even your neighbor that every morning on Sunday sees your car leave its house and they thought, there they go again. You may not know who's watching you, but I guarantee you there's a lot more people watching you sometimes than you think. What is your sermon and how are you sharing your sermon? Well, I want to emphasize on you today, and I think this is so great for our church. This is a strength of our church, and that is church, if it should be anything, it should be personal. You know what I mean when I say that? Church could just be all ritual, couldn't it, right? And for some people, it can be, even in a Baptist church. And we're not known for our liturgy or our rituals, but we can still have those same patterns, right? I mean, without even having to go to much trouble, most of you in here, sitting here today, could say 9:30, we're supposed to start Sunday school, but we'll probably start about 9:50. There'll be some donuts in there, a little bit of coffee, and one big one we have to split up. We'll come into the sanctuary. We'll start about 5 minutes late. We'll sing 4 to 5 songs. We'll have an offering. Rick will say, the Lord's grace is good, right? Free will, free grace, free salvation. Then we will, after that, we're going to have the preacher stand up. He's going to talk way too long, but hopefully there'll be a few good things in there. He'll go to the piano. He'll play. We'll pray, and then we can go eat something good. Right? We can even be a ritual in here, can't we? But can we be personal with the gospel? I'll tell you, last week, I saw someone in our congregation was really moved while they were sitting here in our pews, and that was reassurance to me that the Lord's Spirit is still at work in this place. If you would have seen these boys coming in on Tuesday night to decorate, and then yesterday, they are so amped up for this week. Now, I'm afraid their expectations may change when they realize we're not playing baseball for 4 hours or whatever. But they are excited. And I guarantee you that the Lord is going to move and work in this place this week. But we need to be personal. We need to talk to people. We need to engage people. We can just sit and go through patterns. Anybody can do that. We need to depend on the Lord to guide us to engage the people he puts in our path. This is a long time ago. Now I think about it. It was 2004. So 14 years ago, Wendy and I took Isaiah and Brooklyn. We went over to Spain and met some friends of ours from college who are missionaries in a little town called Alpurete. It's near Madrid, about an hour from Madrid. And we got to watch how they worked. And I was just amazed, like, how that they were relating to people. That's what I couldn't imagine, how well they did that. Well, what I thought was interesting is I read their newsletter from this week. So we went to visit them 14 years ago and got to see them work. We're still getting weekly newsletters from them. And so this week, Anthony and Lee sent a newsletter, and I want to give you just a little bit of an idea of what they're doing to reach people with the gospel. So you can pull up the picture there, hopefully, Diane. You'll see a picture of all these hands around a Bible. And this is a little quote from their message. So everybody can see all the different countries there, right? So Anthony and Lee writes this. They say, soccer has taken center stage in many parts of the world over the last few weeks as millions have tuned in to the World Cup matches. Some underdogs have won while some of the favorites left the competition early on. Millions dress in their team's colors, cheer with excitement, and then they break down into tears when their team is eliminated. Interestingly enough, the FIFA has banned players from wearing attire with religious messages, and Russia has toughened up rules to prevent open evangelism, the message of Jesus Christ has still been shared. Some prayed on the field. Others took to their Instagram and other social media accounts to promote Christ. And so Anthony and Lee, they say this, we are going to try and follow the theme of cheering on our favorite sports team as we share with you this month, but our goal is that through it all, Jesus takes center stage. And I wanted to show you a graphic of their VBS. Does that look familiar? Do you see? You can see our graphic in the little lower right for our VBS, right? They're doing the same VBS that we are doing, but they're doing it in a little town in Spain. So this little church, it's bigger than our little church, but this little church is out there reaching out the community, and they're trying to do the very same things that we are doing. And I want to encourage you today that Paul, he had a very similar idea about reaching people who needed Jesus. And we're going to look at those things this morning. So the first thing I want us to focus on, we're going to look down in verse 19 again. And that is, we want to win as many as possible without compromising the gospel. That last phrase is kind of important, okay? We have people today that have a win as many as possible, and sometimes they compromise the gospel in the way that they do things. We don't want to do that. But again, look at the verse 19. Paul says this. He says, "Though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible." And again, what I'm saying here today is I think we need to be personal. We need to engage people that we can share the gospel. In his book, Sources of Strength, ex-president Jimmy Carter shared this lesson. He says, after a personal witnessing experience with Eloy Cruz, an admirable Cuban, a Cuban pastor who had a surprising rapport with very poor immigrants from Puerto Rico, I asked him for the secret of his success. Now listen to this, it's so good. He was modest and he was embarrassed, but he finally said, "Señor Jimmy, look at this. We only need to have two loves in our lives, a love for God and for the person who happens to be in front of us at any given time." Does that sound familiar? Love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself, right? This Cuban pastor had it figured out. I'm going to love God all the time, and whoever is in front of me, I'm going to express love to them so they can know about Jesus. And Jimmy Carter goes on to say, that simple yet profound theology has been a great help to me in understanding the scriptures. In essence, the whole Bible is an explanation of these two loves. So in verse 19, Paul says, though I am free. What's it mean to be free? Are you guys free today? Why are you wearing what you're wearing today? Well, because it's not 10 degrees, right? Maybe because it's not 120 degrees, right? Why do people wear suits and ties? Why do people wear shorts? Why do ladies wear dresses or they don't wear? They wear pants or something, right? Why do you wear your hair the way you do? Well, I don't have much choice. There's just not much there. Many times we are pressured by our culture or our society to adhere to norms, okay? And sometimes, not all the time for sure, but sometimes those things can actually conflict with the truth of the Lord, the gospel, with the scriptures. Today, what Paul is laying out here, there was a group of people at Corinth who were judging him tremendously for some of his actions, for his claim to be an apostle, for his trying to teach and lead and guide. They were really criticizing him left and right. In our day, we just call that judging, right? Have you ever felt judged? Ever felt like someone looked you up and down and already decided that they knew you inside and out? I feel that way almost every Sunday. When I come down to church on a Sunday with a tie on, I feel like anybody that sees me in a restaurant or in a car or wherever, they think, oh, I already got that guy figured out. He must be a super conservative, fundamentalist, Baptist, thinks he's better than everybody else, and that's why he has a tie on. Now, I can live in that frame of mind, and I can really let that get to me, or I can do what Paul said and say, I'm free. Here's what I'm challenging you today. You are free to please only one person. If you can grab hold of this, it'll really encourage you a lot. You don't have to please anybody else if you'll please God. That's what it is to be free. Paul says, I am free, and so I don't have to please anyone. If you read the first part of chapter 9, you'll see all the people who are criticizing him and judging him. Even his friend Barnabas, they were being judged by outsiders, but he didn't let that get in the way of his witness. And he was guided by this principle in his life, and that is he wanted to win as many as possible. And he didn't have to have a pulpit. He would speak wherever he could gain a listening ear. As a matter of fact, Paul says earlier in chapter 9, hey, we could have demanded our rights. We are delivering you the truth of the gospel, and for us to do that efficiently, he could say, you need to give us money so that it will sustain us so that we can share the gospel. But he said, no, Barnabas and I, you know what we do every night or every morning, vice versa? We're out working. We're out making tents, and then somebody sells the tent, so we have enough money to eat, enough money to travel, so that we don't have to be a burden to anyone, so we can share the gospel freely. Again, Paul says, I am free, but my goal is that I want to win as many as possible. He set out to serve others that he might gain an opportunity to share the truth and the love of Christ with them. How are you sharing your sermon, even this week, right? Is your goal to see people that are far from God to be drawn to his son, Jesus Christ? Paul says, I'm going to win as many as possible. And he says to do that, that's our next section. Look at verse 20, and that is to be all things to all men. Look at this again, all things to all men. Verse 20, Paul says, to the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, although I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. Verse 21, to those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. Verse 22, to the weak I became weak, to win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. Paul went a lot further than many of us would go. He did whatever he could to relate to those around him that he might share Christ with them. He didn't limit himself to a certain group of people. What group are you today? How many of you are blue collar? Is that your picture, right? How many of you are white collar? Some of you are so white collar, you're sitting here lying right through your teeth. How many of you are hunting and fishing enthusiasts? A few of those. How many of you are NASCAR fans? Thank you, Brother John. Let me see the hand. How many of you are barbecue fans? We've got to keep quite a few of those, right? Maybe a few that aren't quite so much. Okay. What groups do you identify with? We could go down the list, right? Like Isaiah and I would be Illini fans. Some people are, I feel sorry for them, but they're Kentucky fans, but that's just how it is. Works some way, right? There's so many different groups of people, isn't there, right? And isn't it interesting how certain groups kind of intersect that don't have anything necessarily to do with each other? Like you could have people that love cars who are Sunday morning go to church people, and you have people that love cars who never enter the door of a church, right? Okay? Sometimes what we find ourselves doing, though, is we only go and flow in a particular circle because we're afraid to try to relate outside of our circle. Does that make sense? Do you feel intimidated by people who are really wealthy? Or on the other end, do you ever feel a little bit concerned if you're around people who are very poor? I know when we go to help the homeless that first time, that just always seems a little awkward. It's a little bit hard to step into that. The first time you go in the jail, the very first time, after that, it's not a problem. But the very first time you step in, you're like, it's just different. These people are doing something different than I'm doing. And you kind of feel you have to overcome those barriers and those boundaries. Well, let's look just briefly at some of the barriers that Paul was willing to overcome so that people could know about Jesus. What's the first one he said? He said, to the Jews. Paul says, to the Jews, he would become a Jew. Now, he has a great advantage here in that Paul was a Jew, right? His heritage was split. So he has a Roman heritage, but also a Jewish heritage. And that allows him to identify. Paul says, hey, I can really get with the Jews. This is not a problem. I am born a Jew. For me to relate to them, that would probably be his main circle. What's your main circle today? Like for your preacher, you could probably think this is a little strange maybe, but I grew up in Decatur and just good old blue-collar, hardworking people, not the wealthiest of the wealthy, not the poorest of the poor. That's kind of the people that I grew up around. That's kind of where I come from. That's where I easily seem to relate. For Paul, that was the Jews because he was a Jew. So he could relate there. He says, I will become a Jew to the Jews so that I can tell them about Jesus. Then he talks about those under the law. Now, this is probably people who are either proselytes to Judaism or Gentiles who were God-fearers who understood the law of God. Now, what's Paul know about the law? He was a Pharisee of Pharisees, right? Like, he was taught by Gamaliel. He would have been a high-ranking Pharisee, And he says, even though I'm a believer now and I'm no longer of that mindset, I can use that knowledge and those relationships to connect with those people that I can tell them about Jesus. Now, as you think about through your life, think about the different experiences and places that God has placed you, right? This is going to sound really silly, but I love to throw these crazy frisbees and try to throw them in baskets. And what I should pray about, what I should look for is an opportunity. How does that give me an opportunity to relate to someone that I might share the gospel with them? How about you today, right? Maybe it is making some meat, or maybe it's making a smoker, or maybe it's going to the track. Maybe it's traveling around the world. Maybe it's so many different things, right? Why is the Lord taking you through this path, and how can you use that as an opportunity to engage people? Now, hear me out today. I am not saying to be fake in any way, okay? I'm not saying that you're using, like a salesman would use some sort of fake thing to gain somebody's sale. I'm saying you're using an opportunity to engage someone on a personal level to let them know that Jesus loves them. Paul says to those under the law, hey, I can become under the law so that I can talk to them. What about the next group? He says to those without the law. Who's that? Those who are under the law. That's the Gentiles. Do you think that might be a little bit uncomfortable? What if your whole life you were taught that you should not eat pork? And someone invites you to a barbecue. How do you handle that situation? Right? That would be tricky, right? Think again, Paul has this Roman heritage that probably helps him a little bit. But even as he was working with Timothy, he told Timothy, you're going to have to be circumcised. But when he was working with Titus, he told Titus, no way, you are a Gentile, you will not be circumcised. Because you are going to relate to people who are not Jewish. And I need them to know that the gospel is not bound by some action or by some work, but that it's bound on the work of Jesus Christ. Think with me today a little bit. Who's the group of people that maybe the Lord is bringing you into their path and you're a little bit nervous about it? You don't really fit in there, and yet maybe God has given you an opportunity to win as many as possible in that group. Are you hearing me today? It could be a different culture, a different language, different socioeconomic status. I mean, it could be as simple as a rival, someone who likes a different team or likes a different culture a little bit. How's the Lord bringing them? Paul says, I can even minister to the Gentiles. Now, you notice he qualifies that, doesn't he? He says, though I am without the law, though I'm free here, he says, I am under the law of Christ. Are you hearing what he says there? And I'm going to hit this in just a second. There are boundaries, even still, to becoming all things to all men. Then finally, he mentions those who are the weak. If you study the book of Corinthians, you would see Paul has this long discussion about what you can eat or not can eat. How many of you like a good deal? Anybody here? Your preacher loves good deals, right? Coupons. Megan sends me a coupon, makes me so happy, right? You like, if you think you can get a discount, like Kohl's is one of my favorite places because everything's always on sale, right? The weak, the discounted, the idea that I can get a bargain, right? Well, here's what was going on. In Corinth at the time, when you went to go buy your steak, there was a discount section for the meat that had been offered to idols. So while everybody else was paying $7, $8 a pound, you could pay just $4 a pound for the meat that was offered to the idols. Do you buy that meat? That's an interesting question, isn't it, right?
Well, if nobody from church sees me, I can probably buy this real quick.
And if somebody that's at church that's pretty vocal, they're like, we should not be buying meat that's offered to idols. That's wrong. I better not see any of you doing that. You see that situation, right? And so there were those, Paul says, who their conscience was weak, and that if they were to eat meat that was offered unto idols, they would feel like they were doing a great sin against God. Paul says, then if that's the case and it's going to break them down, I will not eat meat if it'll protect my brother for whom Christ died. Wow. That's powerful, isn't it? Again, what was his goal? To win as many as possible. He didn't want anybody being destroyed, anybody being torn down. So he would even be weak to those who were weak. Now, I want to qualify all this with this next statement. So look at this fifth thing here and let it be an encouragement to us this morning. Paul did not say he would become a thief to win the thieves. He did not say he would become an adulterer to win the adulterers. He did not say he would become a drug addict to win drug addicts. He was always under the law of Christ. Can you hear the word of the Lord today? All right? So if you go fishing to reach people and become fishers of men, that's awesome. If you go hunting to do the same thing, if you cook certain things to do the same thing, whatever your hobby is, but you always put that and limit that by the bounds of I'm always under the law of Christ. And so I want to challenge you this morning. Are you willing to become whatever God asks of you that you might reach whomever he asks you to reach? This is what I thought was so awesome from my missionary friends. Anthony, he sings in choir. You know why he sings in choir in a Spanish town? That he might win as many as possible. Christy and Tim are also missionaries in the same town. Christy teaches piano lessons. You know why? Because she wants to win as many as possible. Tim, who was about a little bit better basketball player than me by about that much, which means he wasn't very good. He plays soccer left and right. This great big old guy, he's really trimmed down a lot. I mean, he lost a lot of pounds probably playing soccer. Why does Tim go and play soccer, even though that may not be his best thing? To win as many as possible. Shane and Joy teach English. They have a computer class. Shane teaches guitar. What are these people doing? We call them missionaries, but you know what they're doing? They're being personal. They're being church personal. They're interacting with people in their world, where they're at, where they have similar interests, in the hopes of an opportunity to share the truth of the gospel with them. So again, today I challenge you, how will you use the gifts God has given you to connect with people who need Jesus? If you're going to do this, you got to make a commitment. And this is where those sports themes come in. Look down at verse 24. Our commitment, and this week as we're going to talk about in Bible school, is to get our game on, to really be active, to be committed to win as many as possible, is listed for us right here in these last verses. Look at this last paragraph. Paul says, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. No, I beat my body and I make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. Okay, real quick here as we wrap this up this morning. There's two pictures, athletic pictures. The first one is of a runner. We have a runner or two in our church, right? They can probably help us with some of these things just a little bit. The runner runs for what? For the prize, right? They get their eye on the prize. They're going to run the race. To win the race, they're going for the prize. They run hard. They run a pace run. They run fast. Now think about that on a spiritual side of things. Runners that are really effective, do you think they normally sleep in until about 10 and they fill up on cheeseburgers and french fries? They probably don't do so well, right? Runners that take little breaks in their runs, are they going to beat? They going to win the prize? Well, maybe if it's a long distance race, but if it's a short one, maybe not so much, right? They put their whole effort into it. They train and they train and they train to win. They're passionate about the prize. They're passionate about the goal. Are we passionate about people coming to Christ? That's what Paul is encouraging us today. They go into strict training. Mentally, they train. They train their muscles. They train by what they eat. Again, spiritually, the same thing, right? If we're feeding ourselves a spiritual diet of spiritual junk food, are we going to be ready to fight the devil when he comes after us? We're not. They get a corruptible crown. These people are running for something that fades away. Have you ever thought about that? Right? They put everything they have into opportunity to win, and they get a crown, and especially in Paul's day, probably like a wreath, that maybe in a very short time, it's gone. Which is really a true picture, isn't it? You can fill your shelf with trophies and with medals, with awards, but eventually, is that going to do you any good? No. So Paul says, we run to get a crown that is eternal. So he says, run with purpose. That's why I want to challenge you just a little bit today. How are you running? Are you pacing and are you running to win, or are you just hoping you finish? If I was in a marathon, even if I was in a 5K, I would just hope I could finish. That's where I'm at physically, right? But spiritually, are we doing the same thing? Are there people that are just hoping, well, you know, I got baptized way back when, so hopefully that's enough, and maybe I'll just slip into heaven? Or are you running to win? Are you running to please the Lord? Are you running to win as many as possible? Paul says, I'm passionate about running for the Lord. How are your spiritual disciplines today? Are you spiritually fit? Have you ever had a physical? Don't you hate physicals? And I don't like them, right? They check everything about you, and then they tell you that your body mass index is way too high, or that your iron is low, or that whatever, right? They give you all these things. Oh. Let's say that we did a spiritual fitness test today. How would you do? Awfully quiet out there. How's your relationship with the Lord going? What have you learned about the Lord this week? Have you executed your game plan? If you've had choices this week where the Lord allowed you to be tempted, how did you handle that situation? Did you trust the Lord? Have you had opportunities for people to serve? Did you go ahead and go about your business, or did you follow the leading of the Holy Spirit? How's your prayer life? How's your encouragement and your fellowship with other believers? How's it going? If we're going to be successful, we want to be spiritually fit. Again, make the crown your purpose. Run for that incorruptible crown. He has one more image here, and I want to bring that up briefly. So you've got the runner, but you also have a boxer. Now, have you ever seen shadow boxers? I'm pretty good at that. I'm good at a lot of shadow things, right? You've heard air guitar players, air drummers, shadow boxers, right? Paul says, I'm not a shadow boxer. I'm not beating the air. I'm aiming at something. I'm fighting with a purpose. Again, are you just kind of showing up to church, or you're just showing up to a Bible study, or just showing up hoping things are going to work out, or you're actively seeking to do the Lord's will? Paul says, I have purpose in what I am doing. And here's the important part, and I think this is a challenge to me and hopefully to all of you as well. Paul says, I beat my body so as to avoid hypocrisy and disqualification. Even the Apostle Paul could be disqualified. Right? Disqualification means you don't run by the rules. And sometimes we try to cheat on our Christian life. Paul says, so what I do is I make my body a slave to me. I tell it what to do. I tell it what it's going to be. I get my eyes where they need to be, focus on what they need to be. My passions are where they should be. And I'm continually having to beat my body so that I'm not a hypocrite and so that I avoid disqualification. Isn't that challenging today? Do you realize that today? If you're going to please the Lord, you're going to have to beat your body a little bit, right? We talked about this in our study on sin, right? You have the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. The devil's been using that for a long time. If you're going to pursue and you're going to be active and you're going to win as many as possible, then you're going to need to keep yourself in check. And that's here what Paul mentions. Today, I just want to, again, keep encouraging you. I want you to connect. If you want to connect, you need to get personal, get involved with people who need Jesus and help them with their hurts. Again, I hope you guys take this the right way. This is nothing about me because I'm a mess, and you should know that by now. But it is such a blessing for me to go into the jail and have an opportunity to speak to those guys in there. If you guys, wherever your jail is, it may be the homeless ministry, it may be the senior care, it may be a pregnancy care clinic, it may be a nursing home, whatever. Jump in where the Lord leads. You're going to find such a blessing when you connect with people and get personal. Let me read this final illustration from Tom Rainer. He says, Gloria was ready to take her life. Years of drug abuse and failed relationships, multiple rejections had taken their toll. Prepared with countless prescription drugs she had saved for the purpose, Gloria turned on the television to keep her neighbors from hearing. Well, the channel happened to be tuned into a Billy Graham crusade. And at the bottom of the screen was a telephone number for anybody needing help. So Gloria called the number before she took the pills. The counselor recognized the seriousness of Gloria's situation, and she directed her to a nearby Wesleyan church where someone would be able to help her. Gloria decided to put off her suicide and attended church the next day on Sunday. Just before the worship service began, Gloria met the pastor. "Billy Graham sent me," she told him. Sometime later, Gloria was able to give this testimony. "Billy Graham saved me from killing myself, but my church showed me how to be saved from my sins. The love of the people was incredible. I never knew someone as dirty as me could ever receive love again. The people accepted me just as I was, and I have seen Jesus. He is in the faces of all these people who love me." Don't you want to be that kind of church? Amen. Here's where I want to challenge you again. We're going to have an altar prayer right after this. This week, you're going to see all kinds of faces. Right? Some of them are going to really try your patience if you're here at VBS. Some of them are going to just drive you crazy. That's okay. What's our goal? To win as many as possible, right? To love those who are hurting, to love those who need Jesus. Every one of those kids that are here this week, every parent that's here this week will need the Lord. And here's my challenge to you today is, will you commit to love and serve the people the Lord puts before you this week? Some of you may not be at VBS this week because you have other things going on. I would still challenge you with the same thing. The Lord will put people before you this week. So here's what